Ray Rice has a strong history of being an upstanding citizen, and though the images captured on that videotape that day are very disturbing, that's why the NFL went ahead and handed down a 2-game suspension plus an additional $58,000 fine.
We always said from the beginning that the circumstances would determine the consequences. There are consequences when you make a mistake like that. I stand behind Ray. He's a heck of a guy. He's done everything right since. He makes a mistake, all right? He's going to have to pay a consequence.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, it's time for another edition of the JMRA Podcast. It's a late night version of the JMRA Podcast as we tape in the wee hours of Saturday morning to bring you the latest and greatest with the National Football League and, of course, fantasy football as well. A lot to get to, and we'll certainly delve into the Ray Rice debacle coming up in just a few moments, because I've got a plenty to say about that, believe you me. But first, a few bits of business to take care of. As always, you can check out Joe Montana's Right Arm on the blog, joemontanasrightarm.com, also on Twitter at joemsrightarm, and on Tumblr as well. We delve into that a little bit. ilikefootballandstuff.tumblr.com. And excitingly enough, I'm so pleased and honored that this happened today and they accepted my request. You can now find the podcast on Stitcher. So if you just go to stitcher.com and do a search on the JMRA Podcast or Joe Montana's Right Arm, you can find this podcast and the previous other 16 editions of this podcast as well. So good times around for the podcast. And of course, again, thank you to the folks over at Stitcher. Okay, also some other exciting news to share with you. As some of you know, if you are a diehard follower, if you're a real ardent follower of this podcast and the blog, you may know that in one of my previous 65 other lives, I delve into writing for a fantasy football magazine, and it is out on newsstands right now. The Fantasy Football Guide 2014 Professional Edition. Let me reiterate that because it's a little bit of a lengthy title, I feel. The Fantasy Football Guide 2014 Professional Edition with LeSean McCoy of the Philadelphia Eagles running, seemingly, on his way towards the end zone on the front page of the cover. So be sure to check that out if you're out there in a bookstore this weekend or in the upcoming days and weeks leading up to your fantasy draft. Be sure to grab it. It's got a lot of good information as you get set for your fantasy draft, and it has one of my favorite features of any fantasy magazine: strength of schedule, because the schedule is so important when you're picking in a fantasy league and trying to figure out how to handle your business the final like 5 weeks of the season, including the playoffs. So strength of schedule in there, check it out, look at it, drink it in, and go out and buy this magazine. I would really appreciate it if literally instead of buying one magazine, you picked up 10 copies and purchased all of them all at once. I would be extremely grateful and thankful if you did just that. So again, the Fantasy Football Guide 2014 Professional Edition. I got a chance to write about Peyton Manning amongst other players. You know who two guys I got this year for player profiles? One was Peyton Manning, and you know how I feel about Peyton Manning, so I enjoyed that. I wish I could have written about it for about 6,000 words rather than, you know, 250. So I got Manning, and I got Ray Rice. Now, this magazine comes out before the official suspension was announced, and that came down, obviously, on Thursday. So that was not included in here. However, I did mention the fact that in all likelihood, it looked like he was going to be suspended. And that's our segue to the opening of our news discussion. We're going to go over a lot, including the top 15 tight ends in fantasy football this year, and a whole lot of other news and notes as it relates to the NFL, but we've got to stop first and talk about this Ray Rice thing. I have not had a chance to write about it on the blog yet. It's just, where do you stop and where do you finish with this? Now, just as a bit of a background for me, like, I grew up in the 90s, and, you know, I just had a birthday last week. So I was a child of the 80s and 90s as it relates to growing up and watching football, but I really didn't grab hold of the NFL as far as week in, week out, steady watcher until like 89, 90 season, and then away I went. And really the big bellwether team of that era was the 90s Cowboys, and they had a lot of nefarious characters on there. Michael Irvin, Nate Newton, Eric Williams, you can keep going on and on and on. And their guys obviously had their litany of problems. But at the end of the day, it was an enjoyable era of football. Same into the 2000s with the Patriots and the greatest show on turf, Rams. So many fun things about the NFL that I've enjoyed watching over the last, 25 years or whatever it's been since I first started watching the NFL. Thursday was the first day that I didn't like being a fan of the NFL. And I felt kind of ashamed of being a fan of the NFL. And the reason I felt that way was because of the Ray Rice decision. Unless you've been hiding under a rock, you know by now that Ray Rice was suspended for 2 games by the NFL and Commissioner Roger Goodell for conduct detrimental to the NFL and just overall day-to-day life. He, of course, had that incident several months ago where he dragged the limp carcass of his wife, now wife, out of an elevator in Atlantic City after, according to reports, he punched her and knocked her out. And he, after a meeting with Roger Goodell, after Rice spoke with Goodell, after Rice's wife spoke with Goodell, Goodell decided to give him 2 games. We have seen some of the totality of the national media coming out to speak out about this. Michelle Beadle had a very strong take. I thought it was on point. The same for Keith Olbermann. He was tremendous. If you get a chance, go on YouTube and check out Keith Olbermann's rant on this Ray Rice situation. It was spectacular. And, you know, kind of getting back to that point, that's why I'm really sad about, being a fan, because you don't want to support a sport where the administration does not get it. And it's pretty evident to me that, and look, I get that we don't have the details, the public doesn't have all the details as far as what happened goes. But I got to be honest, I don't give a crap what happened in that elevator, because here's what I know, okay? There is a police record of some sort that says Ray Rice struck his wife and knocked her out into a state of unconsciousness. And then from there, we know that he dragged his wife's body out of the elevator limp and unconscious because he had knocked her out. Under no circumstance should an argument that leads to a man knocking out a woman be tolerated. And I'm tired already of hearing, and I turned on Baltimore Sports Talk Radio on Friday for about 20 minutes, and that was about 20 minutes too long. The apologists for Ray Rice, and that goes to the Ravens organization, who they were embarrassing on Thursday. John Harbaugh, you want to understand why Bill Belichick gives you boring press conferences? Yesterday is exactly why he does it. Because you don't want, as a head coach, to stick your foot in your mouth. And in my view, he did. You don't bring kids into this and say, this is a teachable moment for kids, or whatever nonsense he was trying to spew to put a positive spin on this. Give me a freaking break. That was embarrassing yesterday. Just say it's over with. The league decided to do what it was going to do and move on. And that's it. Instead, I got to hear John Harbaugh beating the drum for Ray Rice and sounding like really just a guy who just doesn't understand. And that seems to be the overriding factor here. I don't think there's a circumstance, really. I was thinking about this today because people have tried to rationalize what happened and say, oh, well, you know, you don't know what happened in that elevator. Maybe she was getting physical with him. Ray Rice is a cannonball, okay? So I don't really care what Jhené Palmer was doing. I really don't. It does not matter to me. You cannot, under any circumstance, condone this. And I'll tell you why. The thing that bothers me a lot about this situation is people, when you hear that some of these defenders, players defending players on television, when you hear some of these media members defending Ray Rice, the thing that I don't quite understand is you can't compare John Q. Public to this situation with Ray Rice. There's a very small minority of individuals on this planet that play for the NFL. And if you play for the NFL, you're held to a different standard than everybody else in terms of conduct on and off the field, okay? And this nonsense that we keep hearing, well, you know, everybody deserves a second chance. Okay, let me ask you a question. Let me ask you this. If I got up right now, I put my headset down, I turn off this podcast, and I go down the street here, about 2 miles down the road, and I knock off my local convenience store, okay? I have what, in my view, I have okay standing. I'm not what I would call a bad guy. I feel like I'm a decent human being. I'm a law-abiding citizen. If I knock off the store, okay, am I going to get arrested? Yes. Am I probably going to lose my job? Yeah. And the defense of, well, he's a good guy, that doesn't fly with me for this. It doesn't. This guy punched a woman out, throwing allegedly uppercuts. I don't give I don't care whether or not Ray Rice is of good character. I don't. I think that's one of the most overblown plot lines in this whole thing. Oh, he's a good guy, so, you know, you got to cut him and break. No, I don't. So is it okay for any guy who hasn't hit someone to hit a woman now? Is that what you're saying, essentially? Because it's, oh, well, you know, hey, he's a good guy. He hasn't done anything like this before. Give him a break. No, absolutely not. And as far as the length of the suspension goes at 2 games, that's a joke. And that's where the league, the NFL in the last 72 hours has embarrassed itself to no end from a couple of perspectives. Number one, you can't have a precedent where, and I think there needs to be some, because people keep bringing up the Albert Hainsworth case. The previous administration with Paul Tagliabue and Roger Goodell a little different. I will say Goodell is a lot better at disciplining players than Paul Tagliabue was. It was like the wild, wild west at certain points of the Tagliabue regime. But, man, I don't know how you live with yourself if you're in the NFL office suspending a guy 2 games for punching a woman. I don't care what the scenario was. Giving a guy 2 games for something like that is such a horrible example to take the lead on something. It's almost offensive. It really is. For Roger Goodell to do that, and then, really the only thing we've heard from him in the last 72 hours is the letter he wrote Ray Rice. Okay? I just watched Adam Silver several weeks ago get up in front of the world and tackle racism head on. Meanwhile, back at the Funny Farm, we've got Roger Goodell writing a letter and not addressing the public. So, and it is especially damning considering you have people obviously saying that he is in some way advocating domestic violence, domestic abuse. If that is even a remotely realistic plot line. You got to come out and address it. And they're not really addressing it. And the Ravens haven't really addressed it either. I mean, you know, you have to make a stand here and come out as a league and or a team and do something that is right by the customer. Because at the end of the day, you don't want to offend a customer base. It's like anything else. If I'm running a business, I don't want to offend one of my customers, one of my groups of customers. And that's what the NFL is doing. The NFL, by giving Ray Rice his 2-game suspension, is saying females across the world that like football, and there's a good chunk of you, there's anywhere between 45% to 50% of the fans in this league are females. And you know what the league is saying to you? Give us your money, because we don't really care about you any other way. Give us your money. Give us your money for your hats. Give us your money for your tickets. Give us your money for your pink jerseys. All that stuff. That's what they're doing. They don't care. That's what it looks like. It looks like this cluster of people from the Shield are collectively saying to the female fan base, go fly a kite. We're going to suspend this guy 2 games. Live with it. And that's where we're at. I mean, this is, I really believe this is an embarrassment to the sport. And it'll be very interesting to see how this story progresses and whether or not it has legs heading into next week. Because when you announce something like this and it's heading into the weekend, sometimes these stories get lost in the shuffle. But you wonder how much angst we will have about this particular situation moving forward here in the upcoming days and weeks, because I just think it is a black eye to the league. You want to make a statement, and you always, to me, when you have these situations, you always want to rule heavier than you go than lighter. I mean, that makes sense. And a lot of people are bringing up the drug issues and, you know, the suspensions with Josh Gordon. You had the stomping incident with Albert Haynesworth several years ago. And then Ndamukong Suh, you know, he got a couple of games back in, I believe, 2011 for stepping on a Green Bay offensive lineman. You know, you look at these type of events, and these are things that, to me, don't even hold to a candle to abusing a woman. And why a collection of people in that office, including the commissioner, think that that's okay, that's what you're saying by giving Ray Rice a 2-game suspension. You're saying, you know what, it's not that important. And John Harbaugh yesterday on Thursday saying that this isn't that big of a deal. Oh my God. Can we get a mic away from this guy? You heard some of the cuts in the beginning of the show. I mean, I would not want to be a Baltimore Ravens fan. It would make me sick to my stomach right now. And it makes me sick even reading the story, because it's a joke and it's embarrassing. Domestic violence is a problem in the NFL. It has been for a while, and it is going to continue to be one. If that's the slap on the wrist that guys are getting, this is going to come up again. It is. And sooner or later, this commissioner has got to address it. Enough is enough. I mean, what is the league paying this guy to do? You know, if you're going to run a league, run it. I think he should have gotten, at least, if I were running the league, okay, and the league is putting out this party line that, oh, well, he was never actually convicted of a crime. Well, you know, look, if a guy's convicted of a crime and he goes to jail for a year or two, you may not even have to worry about suspending him. I mean, sure, if he comes back, suspend him. But, I mean, that's, I can't stand that thought process, okay? This was a league that suspended Ben Roethlisberger when he was not found guilty in those sexual assault situations. You go back to the issue in 2010, you know, the league acted accordingly and gave him a 6-game suspension, reduced it to 4. I would have given Ray Rice 8 games. And I know that that's half the season, but this guy hasn't earned the right to get special treatment. Regardless of how many times I hear that he's a good guy, I don't really care. I just think you cannot have a league operation set up in which you're essentially and indirectly telling female customers that we don't care about you. Because you know at some point, somebody is going to protest what happened. You're going to see protesters. You're going to see all that stuff. And it's not going to be pretty for the league. This is a disaster. And it's embarrassing. And quite frankly, like I said earlier, it's kind of a shameful time to be an NFL fan. Because, when you have a commissioner that is obviously siding with the players, I don't know if he's afraid of the collective bargaining agreement. I don't know what it is. But if he's armed with certain information about this case that the public isn't, okay, that's fine. But in the same regard, obviously Ray Rice did something wrong to the extent of needing some sort of anger management counseling. I mean, give me a break. Ugh, I am tired of talking about this, and it's time to move on and change topics. Because enough. Enough with Ray Rice, enough with this situation. The league mishandled it. They've got to do better. They just have to. And the issue is, you wonder whether or not they're going to get that chance in the eyes of some female fans. I wouldn't be shocked if you lose a fan base here, in part because of just a lack of attention to detail. You know, Roger, can you pick up a phone? Can you do an interview with somebody or something? Please let us know that you're actually drawing a pulse. I like my commissioners to actually take charge. That's not what this is. I don't know what this is. It's not common sense. It's complete and utter foolishness. All right, time to get into transition and get into some other news and notes surrounding the National Football League. A lot going on this week. You had the Tony Dungy stuff with Michael Sam. That one, to a lesser extent, is an issue. I mean, hey, I don't personally think Michael Sam is a good enough football player to really play on a weekly basis for the Rams. So I think that might be the issue. But is Michael Sam a distraction? I don't know if distraction is the right word. I think if you have a guy that's going to put together a reality show, that's a problem. But that show is no longer, and obviously, Tony Dungy defended himself, and it is what it is, but it did not help to have that be really the brunt of action this week in terms of what was going on in the league before we got to the whole Ray Rice mess. But a couple of news and notes from around the NFL. Jamaal Charles re-signing with the Kansas City Chiefs, getting a two-year extension and then about $18 million in new money. Coming into the year, I believe he was the 14th highest paid running back in the NFL. He was only going to make about $3.65 million. So he gets a upgrade in terms of salary. He is a happy man. Had signed a six-year, $27 million deal back in the 2010 season. So getting a little financial help as far as that goes in his strong year from a season ago. Elsewhere, the New England Patriots, Rob Gronkowski, clear to practice, not on the PUP list. He's up and ready to roll, you think, if you're a Patriots fan, for week one. So Gronk's progress will certainly be something to watch. In Seattle, Sidney Rice retires at the age of 27 due to a slew of injuries, including concussion concerns as well. And lastly, before we take our first break, and this was really a sad story and probably one of the sadder stories in the NFL in recent memory. Longtime Denver Broncos owner Pat Bowlen resigned control of the team earlier this week, suffering from Alzheimer's disease. And as a result, he turns over the team to Joe Ellis, who will assume control of the organization. Obviously, John Elway has had a great relationship with Pat Bowlen over the years, dating back to his days as a quarterback with the Denver Broncos. And whenever I think about Pat Bowlen, I think about one of my earliest memories of football, and that was watching highlights of the drive. Of course, that famous game from the 1986 AFC Championship where John Elway leads the Broncos on that huge drive downfield to win the game in overtime against the Cleveland Browns. One of the things I remember most about that contest was a guy, and I thought this was so cool. I remember watching this guy on NFL Films presentations of the game, seeing this guy in a mink coat, rocking a mink coat on the sideline. I was like, who is that guy? It was Pat Bowlen. So that's my first memory of Pat Bowlen, one cool son of a gun out there on the sideline rooting on for the Broncos and hoping that John Elway could get his team to a Super Bowl, and he did. Elway leading the Broncos to Super Bowls on five occasions, of course, most notably leading the Broncos to back-to-back Super Bowls in the 1997 and 98 seasons. But just to show you how successful the Broncos were under Pat Bowlen, since 1984, okay, only one team has played in more Super Bowls than the Denver Broncos. Not the Dallas Cowboys, not even the San Francisco 49ers, not the Steelers, not the Packers, not the Redskins. Only the New England Patriots have played in more Super Bowls than the Denver Broncos since 1984. The Broncos have played in six Super Bowls, winning two of them. And, of course, the Patriots playing in seven Super Bowls, going 3-4 in those games. So that shows you the level of success that the Broncos have enjoyed under Pat Bowlen. Certainly, he will be greatly missed out there in Denver. We will take a quick break, get a breather here, and we'll come back with the top 15 tight ends in fantasy football. It's the JMRA Podcast. Stay tuned. Back here on the JMRA Podcast as we go through the top tight ends in fantasy football and some other news and notes as relates to the Shield. I am so winded and tired after talking about Ray Rice. I don't want to hear about it anymore. Kudos, by the way, to Michelle Beadle, who was just, her Twitter game on Friday was tremendous. Thought it was great. She said everything, I think, that a lot of people were thinking, and her rant on TV was even better. So, kudos to her. And if you want some entertainment or lack thereof, do a Twitter search on Michelle Beadle and see some of the rubbish and nonsense that people are writing at her. First of all, people, I got some advice for you. If you're going to rip a celebrity, okay, if you're going to rip another media member, learn how to spell. So and use proper grammar, for heaven's sake. Some of you do not know how to communicate the language properly. When you go after people, talk to them in a controlled manner. Who knows? Maybe you might actually get an intelligent response back. You ever think of that? Oh my God, some of these Twitters, I should look one up. Underscore ZB underscore TF yo stupid talking about, I can't even read that. This is not even English. People, come on. Get it together. But anyways, read Michelle Beadle's Twitter account if you haven't so far. Some very insightful thoughts and some also shockingly ignorant thoughts from people on the subject as well. Okay, it's time to take a look at the top 15 tight ends in fantasy football as we transition from this nightmarish discussion about Ray Rice into something a little bit lighter in terms of trying to get you ready for your fantasy draft. Okay, so we have the top 15 here. We're going to speed through numbers 15 through 11 here in a little bit of a quicker fashion. Number 15, Eric Ebron of the Detroit Lions. A lot of people high on Ebron coming out of North Carolina, and I can't say that I blame him. Good target, athletic guy. Look, at a certain point, you can only buy but so into a rookie. I'm not ready to make that jump. I've seen him in top 10s in some magazines at tight end, so which he could very well end up being that. It's a little bit early before throwing him into that class. And he has Calvin Johnson, you know, Golden Tate once he gets his health together. That's going to be a tough passing offense. But at least in the early going, Ebron may very well get his name out there and get a chance to produce. But as the season wears on, you wonder how productive he's going to be if he hits that rookie wall. Number 14, Delanie Walker of the Tennessee Titans. Walker posted 571 yards last season, also had six touchdown catches as well. So you could potentially see some growth from him. little bit of a sleeper factor there for Walker out in Tennessee. That offense, it remains to be seen how successful that can be, so keep your eye on that. Number 13, Ladarius Green in San Diego. Green, not great numbers from a season ago. And it's funny, Mike Riley, the head coach of the Chargers, said he actually regretted not getting him more snaps on the field. And that's a good thing heading into this season, because that means there's a greater likelihood that Green could be a productive member of this San Diego Chargers offense with Phillip Rivers throwing him the football. Another guy who could be a potential sleeper for this year. Number 12, Martellus Bennett of the Chicago Bears. Bennett has grown a great deal from his days in Dallas to become one of the game's better tight ends. Number 11, Kyle Rudolph of the Minnesota Vikings. Rudolph had his touchdown dropped by 6 last season, caught 9 in 2012, only 3 last season. So he'll be looking to bounce back, and a lot of that will be determined upon that messy quarterback situation out in Minnesota. So keep your eye on that. As we hit to number 10, Greg Olsen of the Carolina Panthers. You know, Olsen got upset recently because a lot of people have been saying Cam Newton has nobody to throw to now since they really gutted their wide receiving core. Steve Smith's out. He's in Baltimore. Brandon LaFell's a Patriot. So they don't really have a lot of the Cruxton core of the passing attack. And Olsen said, hey, wait a minute. What about me? And Olsen last year, 816 yards receiving, 6 touchdown catches as well, and also had 12 plays of at least 20 yards or more. So this is a guy who can get down the field a little bit for you, and he will have to cover his tracks effectively as a member of the Carolina Panthers because, yeah, I mean, that issue is real. There is a grave concern, I think, if you're taking a look at Cam Newton's fantasy value this year, about what he can do without really substantial weaponry in the passing offense. Number 9. Zach Ertz of the Philadelphia Eagles. We're going to find out a lot about the Eagles' offense this year and whether or not that's, you know, the second year of the Chip Kelly system, whether or not defenses catch up to that effectively. That remains to be seen, but we know Ertz has the potential. If the Eagles can have that same level of success they did a season ago, Ertz could be a big, big help to that offense. Ertz 469 yards receiving last year, 4 touchdown catches for the Philadelphia Eagles, who were led by Nick Foles, who had that monster year last year in terms of passer rating and touchdown to interception ratio. Number 8, Dennis Pitta of the Baltimore Ravens. Pitta had that really rock-solid 2012 postseason for the Baltimore Ravens and then got hurt last year and missed much of the season. He is back into the fold. And for Pitta and the Baltimore Ravens offensively, you know, that was a team that really struggled to have a lot of success. And I think they really miss Anquan Boldin, who helped open things up for that particular squad, now a member of the San Francisco 49ers. So, you know, you wonder how much they can get out of Pitta and whether or not he'll be back all the way after suffering really a serious injury, a torn labrum in his hip that cost him most of 2013. We will see if he can return to solid form for Joe Flacco and the Baltimore Ravens passing attack. Number 7, Tony Romo's BFF, Jason Witten, checking in. Witten, he just continues to hang around. He's just there. He's just hanging around all the time. He's not appreciably fast, but when you look up at the end of the year, the guy puts up numbers. 72 catches last year, 851 in receiving, 8 touchdown receptions for Witten. Hey, he's going to be there again probably in the mix, being a guy who's a factor for Dallas, especially in the red zone. And you know teams are going to obviously pay a lot of attention to Dez Bryant. They're going to pay some attention to Jason Witten too, but Witten keeps finding a way to have success. He is 31, though, so sooner or later for him, that ability to separate from tight ends, that's going to be a factor, you'd think, at some point down the line here for Jason Witten. Number 6, Jordan Reed of the Washington Redskins. Reed is back after suffering a season-ending injury a year ago. 499 yards receiving and three touchdown catches for Reed in nine games last year as he heads into his second season with the Redskins. And they're going to potentially, if everybody's healthy and moving right on that Redskins offense, they have a chance to be very good. You have DeSean Jackson on the outside. Also, Pierre Garçon, who was right near the top of the league in terms of receptions last year. And now Jordan Reed in that passing offense. That could be a very potent attack for the Redskins. So Jordan Reed could very well be a good grab despite the fact he's coming off of an injury. Number five, Jordan Cameron. Cameron, seven touchdown receptions last year. 11 plays of at least 20 yards or more, 917 yards receiving, caught 80 passes for the Browns. Now, he is impacted by a couple of things, and when I did these rankings, it was well before the Josh Gordon stuff, so this is in part for the Fantasy Football Magazine. It was collaborative rankings eventually, but we had to dish out our own, and I had Cameron at number five in my initial tight end rendering before all the Josh Gordon stuff went haywire. You're going to have to take a wait-and-see approach with the Browns because you don't know what the totality of Gordon being gone is going to be. He's having his appeal meeting for his one-year suspension coming up on August 1st, but you'd have to suspect that he'll be gone, and that will impact the Browns' passing game. And if Johnny Manziel sees any kind of extended time for this Browns team, I don't think that's going to be a good thing in the long run. So, Cameron, keep your eye out on him very cautiously out there in Cleveland with that quarterback situation. Brian Hoyer should be the one, which is a good sign if you're going to get Cameron because it's likely he'll have better success with him rather than Manziel as Manziel still tries to get his feet wet as an NFL quarterback. Number four, Vernon Davis of the San Francisco 49ers. Davis, 850 yards receiving and 13 touchdowns a season ago. As you get to the top four here and really the big boys in the tight end position, I don't feel like you can go supremely wrong with any of these four guys that we're going to go through here in a second. And with Davis being the first, he's going to be a threat out in San Francisco again. Number three is where things get even more interesting. Rob Gronkowski from the New England Patriots. If he stays on the field, Gronkowski has a chance to be the best tight end out of anybody here that you'll hear about, including Jimmy Graham coming up in a few moments. Gronkowski last year suffering that devastating knee injury against the Cleveland Browns. Here's what you have to be worried about if you're a Gronkowski owner. Played all 16 games in 2011. That was a huge year, 1327 in yards, 90 receptions, 17 touchdowns. 2012, played 11 games, caught 11 touchdown passes, 790 yards receiving. Last year, only played in 7 games, 592 yards receiving, just 4 touchdowns. So we have regressed each year here with Rob Gronkowski, and you wonder if that's going to turn around. And can he stay out of the whirlpool? Can he stay out of the hot tub and stay healthy? If he can, then you got quite a find on your hands there at the number three spot for tight ends. I think he'll be healthier than what he's been the last couple of seasons. And if he is, then obviously number 12 knows how to get him the ball out of New England. Number two, Julius Thomas. Thomas, that big body frame for the Denver Broncos. He is a major force, 788 yards receiving last year, caught 65 balls, 12 touchdowns. Here's what we know about the Broncos going into this year. Peyton Manning threw for over 5,000 yards, okay? He threw for 55 touchdowns. Somebody's numbers in that group from last year coming down, okay? And I'm not even talking about Peyton Manning. You assume he'll go down as far as the passing yardage goes. But some of these receivers are not going to enjoy the same level of success because, again, off-season teams have a chance to study, find out what you like, what you don't like, all that stuff. Julius Thomas, I don't think, will be the candidate for that guy. I think when you look at potential guys who can kind of add that slip of the Broncos, I'm not sure he's that guy. I think Thomas will be a factor once again for the Broncos and one of the deadliest tight ends in football. And, of course, It helps a lot having number 18 throw you the ball. As long as he has Peyton Manning, he's going to be a top three fantasy tight end because Manning loves the tight ends. He has some receivers this year again, but the tight end play very effective for the Broncos last year, led by Julius Thomas. And number one, the wide receiver slash tight end, whatever you want to call him, Jimmy Graham. Graham had that foot injury against the Patriots last year, and that really hindered him the rest of the season. 86 catches, still had 12-15 in receiving, and caught 16 touchdown passes last year. So even after that foot injury where he looked very mortal, he was still a beast. And, you know, when you start talking about guys, well, when do I reach for a tight end? He's a guy you can look at in the second round, obviously, to draft for your team because of what he can do from a production standpoint. Those numbers, those are obviously numbers fitting of a number one wide receiver. It just so happens that Jimmy Graham is a tight end. And clearly in his negotiations to try to get that turnaround so he put a few more bucks in his pocket, you know, he lined up about two-thirds of the snaps last year as a wide receiver. But obviously in your fantasy league, you don't care about any of this stuff. It doesn't matter because you just want the production. You want the guy on your roster. So you get to the second round of a draft, that's the Jimmy Graham zone right there. Second round, third round, Jimmy Graham's going somewhere in between those two. And with that, we have completed another edition of the JMRA podcast. Next time around, we will, kickers and defenses. Do I really need to tell you? Here's what I'll tell you about kickers and defenses, okay? And I'll save you some time. We're going to do another podcast, but we're going to do one, some kind of tips and tricks as far as fantasy leagues go and dealing with that. Kickers and defenses, wait until the last 2 to 4 rounds of your draft before worrying about it. Somebody's going to reach and take the Seahawks defense just because. It's going to happen. You don't need to be that guy, okay? You can find different ways to score. You don't need necessarily the Seahawks defense to get that done. So anyhow, next time around, we'll cover some tidbits on how to deal with the draft and things of that nature. So, again, a reminder, you can check us out on the blog, joemontanasrightarm.com. Also on Twitter, at joemsrightarm. You can check us out on Tumblr as well at I Like Football and Stuff. And as we mentioned at the top of the podcast, we have now joined Stitcher. So the upcoming podcast you'll be able to catch on Stitcher Radio, Stitcher.com. So Stitcher.com, head over there, and you'll be able to check out the latest version of the JMRA podcast. That'll do it for yours truly. Until next time, stay warm, stay cool, wherever you are. Have a good one.